Welcome to the No Film School podcast. This is Gigi Hawkins. This week, I speak with the team behind the film Love and Work, which premiered at Slamdance in January. We came together in Park City in the No Film School house, sitting around a fire, talking about filmmaking. And this team in particular came together to not only make a movie, but rethink the way we make films. It goes without saying that in indie film, you have to wear a ton of hats, but director Pete Oz kind of wears all the hats. Specifically, he directs, produces, writes, shoots, and edits his features and brings actors together for a super lean experience that pushes back on the exhausting work of filmmaking, that lets this team prioritize creativity and collaboration. So yes, he's wearing all the hats, but he's also sharing the hats. As you'll hear in our interview with the team of Love and Work, this entire process was incredibly collaborative and positioned the actors to have autonomy over not only their characters, but the story as well. I don't want to spoil the process because we get into it and it's fascinating. A little background on the story itself. The film Love and Work follows Diane as she arrives at a shoe factory looking for a job. She meets the boss, nails the interview, and gets hired on the spot, immediately joining a small team of coworkers led by a helpful Texan named Fox. She's great at her job, but before her first day of work ends, the factory gets shut down, the boss is in big trouble, and all the employees are suddenly unemployed. Because in this world, manufacturing is prohibited and it's illegal to employ or be employed, which means no jobs. And unfortunately, Diane and Fox love work. It's absurd. It's weirdly beautiful. And it's a film that you can just feel the love and work that went into it, which is why I think it resonates so much with me. And now my interview with the team of Love and Work.
May 10th, Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes is coming to IMAX and theaters everywhere.
What a wonderful day!
This summer, one movie event will reign.
It is our time.
They stole my village.
I know where they're taking your clan.
Bend for your king.
Never.
Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes, only in theaters May 10th. Tickets on sale now. Rated PG-13. Some material may be inappropriate for children under 13.
Okay, we are here with the team behind Love and Work, the feature film that premiered at Slamdance last night. Congratulations.
Oh, thank you.
A Saturday night film. That's a hot ticket at the Yarrow. And so let's go around and introduce ourselves and say the role that we had on the film. Let's start here.
Hi, I'm Charles Watson and I did the music.
My name is Will Madden and I'm the co-writer and actor of the film.
I'm Frank Mosley, and I'm one of the actors in the film.
My name is Pete Oz. I directed the film. I also produced it. I also shot it, and I also edited it.
All the things. Yeah. So we'll start with you, Pete. And can you tell us about the origins of this film, this project?
So the origins of this project is very similar to the origins of the last few movies that I've made, which have a very specific process that starts with finding a location that is narratively inspiring and accessible. And what I found was this 100-year-old warehouse space in Corsicana, Texas, that belonged to or was managed by this really wonderful artist residency in Corsicana called 100 West, where I had done a month-long writing residency. And they had acquired this space that they would provide to artists to use as a studio, to use as an exhibition space. And when I saw it, and they said, if you have any ideas and want to do something with this, let me know. And the space I found very narratively inspiring.
Mm-hmm.
It immediately made me think about things, think about the 1920s. I just saw it like an assembly line of people making boots for the war effort or something. And I took that little kernel of an idea and I brought that to my friend and the other co-writer and actress from the movie, Stephanie Hunt, who also lives in Texas, lives in Austin. And I just told her about this space and this idea of a factory And we started having a brainstorm session and came up with this idea that was very much centered around the idea that we don't really like mass manufacturing. And so there was this idea that Stephanie had of what is a factory that doesn't make anything. And that just got our gears turning. And then with Stephanie and then with Will and all the actors really made the film together. Yeah. And that's where it started.
Such a great origin story. And the space is, it's inspiring, it's beautiful, it's haunting, it's weird. The first shot of the film is, I think, shooting within the space and looking down into this outside. And it like kind of sets the tone in of like what type of movie we're going to be watching. Talk to me a little bit about like how you wanted to bring people into this world.
So I'm also an editor. And I'm also shooting the movie. So I'm very much editing in my head. I'm thinking about the edit at all times. And also we're making these movies with very low stakes, financially, also kind of everything low stakes. It's really much, very much a process designed to take risks, to try things, to see what happens. Mm-hmm. And so the idea of a shot that seems cool in your mind of like just looking out a window at an empty alley and just waiting as we're listening to some nice music and seeing some credits. And then at a certain point, our main character enters. Like that, in my mind, seems like a smart, cool way to see, to start a movie. Mm-hmm. And so I wanted to see if that works. Like, is that cool? I think it is cool.
I can vouch.
And I just like seeing ideas in movies. And the movies that I also like and appreciate, it's like when you see that the filmmakers have ideas and are trying things and are, and that there are reasons behind the shots. Mm-hmm. Tell me a story at all times is the hope.
Now, I want to talk about your work with actors, and you guys can feel free to chime in as well. But like, what is your process specifically regarding how you direct your talent to be so intentionally timed with how they're moving within a frame, for example?
I feel like I want to hear the actors explain a little bit about that. I know, like, very much of what our process is super, super collaborative. They're naming their characters. We're writing it together. There's a thing that we always do on the first day before we start to shoot. The day before we start to shoot is we go to a thrift store and I have them shopping character. And I tell them, all your characters' outfits are in this store. You just have to find them. And then they go around and they pull different clothes, and then we do a little like Pretty Woman fashion show where they go into the fitting room and come out. And like together, we're very much learning about these characters, learning about what the style of the movie is going to be. And it's a really fun way to do all these things that you kind of like have to do. And then what happens when we're like doing the scene and blocking? I know it's all collaborative for sure.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, how it works on the last couple ones I've worked with on Pete have been basically like, Pete'll come in with half an outline, and then once we get to the place, we do a little fashion show and get our costumes. And then each day for about 2 weeks is like we get up, we make breakfast, and then we write the three or four scenes that we're going to shoot. Then we take a break, and then we get in our costumes, and then we shoot those three or four scenes. Great. And then we go hang out at night, sleep, get up, make breakfast, write the scenes, shoot them. So we do it chronologically in that way. And in each time we've worked together, it's been really, we have sort of a nice autonomy in a way to create our characters as we shoot and kind of have a kind of ownership over it that is unique to when you just get a script and you're working on it for weeks or months and then you show up. And so it's like very much feels like there's like another limb as an actor to be like also just creating as well. And I imagine all the actors felt that way, you know, I would say maybe Frank.
Yeah,
that was your
experience too. One of the things I love about Pete, I think he's like a Swiss Army knife of an artist, and he can do it all. I love him because he's so economical, and because, as he was saying, he's the cinematographer, he's the editor, he's shooting to edit. So he knows how the frame is going to be. Knowing the frame so precisely actually is not a limitation. It gives you a freedom to know exactly how you can perform that character within that frame. And as Will was saying too, it's like it helps. Like once you're developing that character in this collaborative, spirited way, like one tiny little detail you find can help inform the entire scene. And that's all because Pete kind of allows it to happen that way. And I think that's really special. I mean, he was talking about the costumes. There was a moment where you're trying to find the right wardrobe. And like, what if we can't find something at this place? And we're looking around and everything I found was so big on. And the whole time I kept thinking, yeah, but if he wants to be a boss, he's, you know, it's got to be fitted. It's got to be perfect.
And then Pete looked at me and he's like, you know, like maybe the idea is that he's trying so hard to be the boss, so hard to be trying so hard to play the boss that it is role playing. It's like being children, you know, playing dress up. And then so then we found these like baggy clothes and all of a sudden I was like, yep, you're right. That's it. And immediately I just kind of sunk into this baggy shirt and these baggy pants and felt like Charlie Chaplin all of a sudden. It was great. You know?
There's also this fun anecdote I just remembered. I hadn't remembered this in a while. Kind of related to like the way we're shooting it, the way we're blocking the stuff, the way we're discovering it together. And we're first day, first moments of the scene of the movie. We're shooting chronologically. So it's like those first moments of the movie. And it's when Hank, the boss, walks up to meet Diane, this potentially new employee. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we're rehearsing it. I don't know if we immediately started shooting the first kind of like walkthrough or whatever, but we're just kind of like talking it through. Frank walks up and as he walks up to her, he says, hey, you know, I'm Hank, I'm the boss. And he's walking up with his hand extended and something felt off to me, not like in a terrible way, but just like, that's not quite right. And we realized, and we made this rule that nobody talks while walking in this movie, basically. You walk up, you stop, then you say your line.
That feels so right.
And it felt so fun to like have that rule that then we're like, and not even to question it. Intuitively, it felt right. Every time you do it, it felt right. We would have a moment where somebody would walk and start to talk too soon. And they're like, I know. It felt wrong.
Yeah. And it's so natural to want to talk and walk or be that. But then it's like, no, this actually gives you something new to try.
No walk and talks in this one. I think that actually kind of informs the feeling of the blocking, which is so specific and why it felt so intentional and like such a choice. I want to talk about this process of development and what that looks like. But I also want to talk about the score and the music and at what point you became involved, Charles, in creating the score for this film.
I think you were maybe just starting the edit when we started talking, because it's a slightly different project for me, because the sound design does so much of the tension building in this movie that it's kind of, my background is making records and like a song kind of what song world. So I was kind of like living in the kind of headspace that I do when I'm making a record, which was really nice, and kind of being really collaborative with Pete on the lyrics, because we kind of knew that the lyrics were going to play a huge part in it, and there needed to be this thread that runs through the movie. And so we had I sang a song, we had a guy called Alan Power and someone called Fife Dangerfield. And so we kind of tried to create these characters for each of the singers as if it was maybe like you were kind of switching on the radio or something like that, you know?
Yeah.
But yeah, it was a lovely, lovely process. Like Pete and I worked together on a film called Youngstown, which was a bit more of a traditional kind of film score. And so it was kind of nice to just work on something that's a little bit different and maybe harks back to where the place that the two of us met when Pete made a music video for my band.
Yeah. So this was all in that post process. Everyone was sent home from the breakfast eating together and then writing and then shooting process. So talk to me about the origins of this process. Is this the first time you've been doing a film like this? And you know, you're kind of this like legend in the LA space. I've heard your name so many times, and I think it's probably because of your collaborative nature. But yeah, talk to me about what the process is. If you were to be like, hello, listener, you want to make a movie, this style, this is what you do.
Yeah, this is what you do. So the quick way in which I arrived at this way of doing it is I made a feature the normal way. And it's a way in which many people make movies. Many people I know have made movies where it's what we call a low budget movie, where it's under $200,000 and you have 20-ish person crew and 20-ish person day shoot. And everyone's sort of doing favors and you're supposed to be having fun and it's really hard.
Yeah.
And then you get to the end of it and you're like, oh, that was so hard. And then you spend a bunch of time editing it. After I had that experience, I thought, I don't really want to do that again. And it was kind of gave a little bit of an existential crisis in a way, where I'd been spending so much of my time in my life working towards this dream of being a feature film director and having a crew and having a set and having all this stuff. And then it wasn't really for me.
Yeah.
The feeling of it wasn't. And it made me say, like, why do I do this? Why am I doing this? And after some soul searching, I remembered that the reason I'm doing this is because it was really fun to make videos with my friends when I was 15. And I thought, as a whatever 30-ish year old adult professional, quote unquote, filmmaker, can I make a movie the way I did when I was 15? And like, why can't I? And then, so then the the way in which all decisions got made were what would I do if I was 15? If I was 15, would I write a script? No, I would not write a script. I would not write a script. I would not have producers. I would not have permits. I would just get together with some friends in a location, in a camera, and try to make each other laugh.
Yeah.
And just film it and have fun. And if something's too hard, you're not doing it. Are you doing 16-hour days? Are you trying to make your day when you're 15? Do you even know what that term is when you're 15?
No,
you're just shooting until it's time to eat pizza.
I was going to say, there has to be a pizza break right. in there.
And you want the pizza. It's not like this weird torturous thing where like, oh my gosh, they're feeding us pizza now.
By choice.
Right. Hopefully it's pizza rolls.
Yes.
And so that was like this idea for like, can it be done? I made a short film with this approach. Also, like the way I made videos when I was 15 was just like, there's no crew. It was just me with a camera and my friends in front of the camera. And sometimes they're filming too, because it's like, there aren't these roles. It's just, we're making a thing together.
Yeah.
So I did a short film with this like theory where we just drove to Arizona and back. And just like, again, to test it, can I just do it if I'm the cameraman, if I'm doing the audio, if I'm doing all this stuff, can I?
Yeah.
Thinking I could, but wanting to test it. Learned some things on that short. Said, I want to try this for a feature. That became Youngstown.
Mm-hmm.
And at the end of that shoot, very much was like, that was too fun to not do every year.
Yeah.
And so much within filmmaking traditionally is expensive.
Yeah.
Historically. And because so much money gets spent, it has to make money because it's like, or you have to be a rich trust fund kid or something,
wealthy.
You know, right. And, yeah. But the beauty of what has happened with technology is that it doesn't have to cost so much money.
Mm-hmm.
And it kind of means filmmaking can just be an activity,
yeah.
can just be almost a hobby and not in a bad way. In a way that's actually like maybe one of the best things you can do with people, with yeah. friends, is like collaborate, explore existence, ask questions, create something. And then you get this movie, which ends up being a document of your experience. It's not even like about the movie you get to watch. You get to remember that time you had those 2 weeks with those people that you love and having really fun.
Can I ask a very yeah. technical question
yes.
of like, how did you... What are the money dollar signs behind this? Like,
yes.
was this... That's my question.
Yeah, yeah. I'm happy to get... So that's all like the philosophical
yeah,
reason.
Yeah.
Like why to do it this way. How to actually do it this way is that I'm the whole crew.
Mm-hmm.
Thus, there's like... It's not that no one's getting paid. It's that there's no one to pay.
Yeah, yeah.
It's always a two-week shoot. I give the actors $2,000 mm-hmm. each, which is a roughly like $150-ish a day, which is what the old like... SAG low budget one was. It's probably going to go up, or probably I know it has gone up, but that's just like what it is. If you don't want to do it, you don't want to do it, whatever. Yeah. But like that's what it is. And then the other thing I say is that I don't want it to cost money for these actors for like them to be in this movie,
right?
So like flights and where we're staying, like all these things, I'm going to cover for sure.
Yeah.
And but then you're just making so many other decisions so that it's cheap and not. Because if it starts costing money, then that puts pressure on the process and the art, and it needs to be something. And once again, like that's the thing we're rejecting to it. So it ends up costing less, like $10,000
mm-hmm.
to shoot it. I'm shooting on my own camera. It's a hacked 5D Mark III.
Uh-huh.
That's a camera from like 2010. It's good enough. Every camera that's new is good enough. You don't need the newest camera, really. The actors, I just have them wear lavs. They're just using the Sennheiser G3 lavs that runs into a Zoom H4N, the mm-hmm. old crappy first version of the H4N.
Yeah.
And I just monitor the audio with just little earbuds. I'm not writing levels. I'm just making sure it's recording and that it's not a really scratchy audio because, yeah. again, the technology has gotten to a point that like getting usable, getting good enough is like so not hard.
Yeah.
And then, I mean, that's it. So then what? What's the next question?
The Airbnb and then submitting to festivals, right?
Yeah, yeah. And what else? I mean, Airbnb and festivals. But then also like, you know, the place you stay probably should also be part of the movie
mm.
in some way.
Mm-hmm.
Like if that can be a location, like on Jethica, the movie prior to Love and Work, it's
yeah.
like the location inspired the movie, but then also like, and that's where we're staying. And like,
right.
this is kind of obvious, but you just really, like that's the rule.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
And if you have some dream of a movie that you want to make, you got to let go of it. And
yeah.
you just got to like live in the reality of like, here's the resources in front of me. And I'm excited by that challenge and that sandbox to play in.
Yeah. It's such a cool framework. And I hope that our listeners repeat it like as you have. And coming in as behind the helm of Pete, what has that experience been like? And specifically, what has surprised you about the creative experience and unpacking what the story becomes?
Mm-hmm. I just love hearing Pete give his spiel about this. And I love watching other people kind of their eyes kind of glaze over and they kind of stare off when he explains the reality of like, this is what we do. This is what it costs. And it's like the sort of notion of like letting everything be magical and unknown and uncertain. And when you trust that leaping off the cliff, like you get a group of people together who go all in and who are good at what they do and are in the spirit of play and fun. Something interesting will conspire, mm-hmm. as has happened every time. It won't always fit into a perfect Aristotelian, you know, story structure, 90-minute sellable thing, but it's always something memorable and interesting, in my opinion.
Yeah.
So it's like a total, you know, special gift, of course. And it's just like, it feels like there's so many like loops and hoops that you have to jump through to kind of express and to create. As an actor, particularly, when you're just given like, here's what you say, here's where you go. And this is very much like the acting is better, I think, because there's just a different kind of freedom.
Mm-hmm.
And to the point earlier too, around like, what's it like to kind of act within the frame or within the kind of structure of you can't walk and talk or you this or that. It feels like a constraining thing, but it's freeing. It's not constraining. It's like this way that the tone of each movie, remember like when we did Jethika, I was panicking because I'm like, I kept asking Pete every like 3 days, like, so what's the tone of the movie we're about to do? And you and like, ultimately I think you just were like, just, I don't know, Coen Brothers. And you just appease me and send me away. So I'm like, okay. And then I was thinking, like, ultimately we didn't know. And in a similar way, Love and Work was like the same. Of like, we don't quite know what it's going to be. And living in that space is actually exciting,
mm-hmm.
and kind of what it needs to be. At any time I've ever seen actors do great work or done something that works myself, it's like, I don't know if this is going to work. This is probably not going to work. Mm. And then that's the stuff that people bring up. So I don't know if that answered the specific question, but
it does, especially that like sort of the specificity of like being able to take the risk of like, I don't know if this is going to work because you've created this environment and the structure of low stakes in a way, mm-hmm. a very safe space to explore and take those risks.
Pete says this thing sometimes when we're on set and he goes, hey, if we're not having fun, then what are we doing here? And it's a real moment that like it does put you back in that space of what he was talking about, being a 15-year-old, making a movie,
mm-hmm.
and just having fun. And I think that pushes you to a place where you will always remember after working with Pete O's that like there's no reason that you shouldn't be making a movie, that you can do it if you want to.
Yeah.
And everybody has these standardized ways of making everything in the film industry. And nobody's thinking about how to break some rules and how to have a little fun along the way. That's like a bonus on top of it. Yeah. I mean, watching the premiere of the film last night with Will, we were saying this morning that we had as much fun just laughing, watching the film as we did making the film at every stage. Because it's also a time capsule. It's like looking back at a scrapbook of a time you had with your buddies.
Yeah. Let's talk about the lows. I mean, are there lows? I feel like you've developed this like sort of resiliency that's awesome. But also you are a one person show. It seems like getting to the point of shooting and then ramping off in many ways. How do you keep that momentum going?
The lows, where are the lows? There's still some, I mean, there's rejection.
Yeah.
In life, in festivals.
Yeah.
I remember after Jethika got into South by Southwest, which is, I've had films I've edited play at Sundance, play at South by Southwest, but this is the first time a film I directed played it. You know, one of the big ones. And I thought, okay, great, I'm in. Like, I'm in, you know, I'm in the party, but like I'm in now, you know?
Yeah.
And then I made Love and Work and I submitted it to South by Southwest and they did not program it. And I thought I was in.
I'm not out. Yeah.
And so it's like this thing that challenges you to be like, why are you doing it? Are you, if you're doing it for because you think you're in, then like you're gonna lose. And I think like that sentiment kind of is always there, such that then I don't even like remember the lows because it's always just this muscle to immediately turn a low into some sort of learning experience or whatever, which is like what one must do to exist.
Yeah.
It's like any trauma, like you gotta find the way in which you've grown from it, or else it's just gonna destroy you. But the other low that I thought of that came to mind as you're bringing this up is that there are parts of it where I'm very alone. Mm-hmm. I like being alone, but sometimes you're very alone because it's like, because there's, I just have like no team when I'm just like doing all this stuff by myself during certain, and there's just like, it's so much work.
Yeah.
Every movie is so much work, you guys. I know you know it and you do a lot of work, but like,
Yeah.
I do like a lot more work. and just like everything. And sometimes I'm like, why am I doing this? Like, why am I just taking on all these little jobs that I don't know why? Because it takes energy to find somebody else to do it. Because then I know that I'm like having somebody else do the job that's not fun.
Right.
And like that doesn't seem fair.
Yeah.
Like I want them to have fun. So that is a thing that comes up, which maybe is almost like motivation to then make another movie. Because like the sooner I can get talking to Will about the next one, like I don't feel alone anymore. And so it like the machine like starts to like turn over again before it's even like over.
That resonates with me. That totally resonates with me. Both the loneliness, but also the excitement for the next one. Yeah. Okay, so you guys are premiering at Slam. I want to hear about the Slam Dance experience. We talk a lot about Sundance and other festivals here on the No Film School podcast. I do think Slam Dance is way more in the ethos of what we're doing on No Film School. So I'm so glad that we get to have you all to talk about it. What is it like at the Yarrow, which is where the festival is this year?
It's excellent. Of course, we're going to say nice things about it because our film's premiering there and we're around all these people. The whole world of independent film is... The whole world is confused right now. Like, we don't know what we're doing. We're like, we're growing, but things are getting worse and all this stuff is so confusing. And we're like, what's going on? But we're going this direction and like, who's steering? And a mantra that I find myself saying, and every time I say it, it still feels correct, which is smaller is better.
Mm-hmm.
And over the whatever 30 years of Slam Dance, 40 years of Sundance, things have changed.
Right.
Things have evolved. The world does change. Things shift in different ways. And we know that Sundance has gotten mega commercial.
Mega.
It's big stars. It's like independent film doesn't even mean anything anymore.
Yeah.
But like over the evolution of it, Slam Dance once was the, I mean, still is, but like it birthed out of being the counter programming to Sundance, the Sundance then, it's still the counter programming to Sundance now.
Right.
So as like Sundance has evolved into like more and more movies of a certain type, certain flavor, certain style, I think Slam Dance has kind of evolved as well to be, still the same, still being like independent film, but maybe even it's like, it's the more independent film or the, not even more, the actual. So it just feels good to be in a more small space where we're all together. There's only two screening halls. You like see people walk out and just get in the line to like walk right back into the next movie that's going to play.
I love that.
This is the environment I like being around. The hustle and bustle of Main Street, the supposed industry wheeling and dealing that may or may not exist.
Yeah.
Not that interested. I really like being around people who like movies and like making movies.
Right. What have you all seen? What films of Slam Dance do we want to celebrate?
I saw a movie I really liked called Chaperone.
Oh, yes.
That was also in the breakout section.
Yeah.
And it was filmed in Hawaii. And I just thought it was so smartly conceived and written. Just this like, this concept is so smart and tight and good. And I thought it was a really well-made film.
Mm-hmm. So a movie called The Accident or First Day that I really was impressed by its daring. It took a lot of formal risks and it was consistent. And that's one of the things I just love seeing in any film, but especially indies where it's like, oh, wow, there is a vision there. There's a consistent aesthetic choice. Then I'm along for the ride, like every step of the way. And just to add on to that, because of that film, makes me think of what Pete just said, which is like, yeah, Slam Dance has always had discovery movies. Yeah. Like I've been fortunate enough to come to Slam Dance over the years and consistently seen films by people I've never heard of. Whereas like you get used to kind of seeing some of the same names popping up as Sundance all the time. But I love going to Slam Dance, you know, making new friends, hearing new voices you've never heard before.
Mm-hmm.
There's a great short that plays in front of our feature by a friend of ours, Hugo D'Souza, called Je ne suis pas un acteur cinéma.
Star de cinéma.
Right? Yes. Un star de cinéma, which is I am not a movie star in English. And I'm really inspired by it, particularly this year as an actor. And through the strikes, I've seen so many actors create their own projects and create their own work from scratch, being like, I don't know what the hell I'm doing, how to produce, how to write. But I have these skills. I have something to offer. And so many actors sort of taking a leap into like taking ownership over creating opportunities for themselves and expressing and learning. And it's like so beautiful and cool to see. It's a great short. Yeah. And it's inspiring as someone who's beginning to write more and be, you know, into get projects, instigating projects, if you will.
Yeah.
That like I'm really inspired by the just like gusto. And he was an hour away from deleting the whole project, which he said in the Q&A. Yeah. He was panicking. He's like, you know what? Fuck it. I'm going to delete it. And then his, I think it was Ryan.
Ryan Thomas.
DP, I believe DP. He was like, convinced, like, just put it out there, you know? So we just released it online and then got into festivals after. But just the spirit of artists just like taking real risks and big swings. And like the accident, a film that it's entirely shot from the passenger side of a car. The whole 70-minute movie is just looking one shot, one angle, and then creating the story around it. So just seeing things that are just bold and just big risks. It's like, and you realize how much you're hungry for it and how much we're craving it in film. So that's what's great.
I feel like Sundance is safe and Slam Dance is
scary.
Scary?
Scary.
Risky?
Scary, yeah.
I don't know. I feel like Slam Dance is less confused about what it is.
Yeah, yeah. That resonates. How about you? Mm-hmm.
I really enjoyed Chaperone as well, actually. I think when you're watching a movie and you kind of forget that you're there, that's to me, that's kind of like the real magic of going and seeing a film and it finishes and you're back in the room and you kind of just forget about everything for an hour and a half, whatever. And I think that was the one that really made me kind of just disappear into the film. And there's lots of really smart choices across the narrative, the music. There was lots of really beautiful kind of Hawaiian kind of, I guess it was like ukulele stuff, but you're transported to that place. Yeah, it was great.
I love that you guys are talking about the bold and scary of Slam Dance in particular, but outside of these festivals, which are known in names, there's a vibrant sort of alt festival and also just like localized festival community. You know, Frank and I, we met at the Nevada City Film Festival, which was so delightfully small that I got to connect with all these filmmakers. I'd love to hear about other festival spaces that are showcasing and supporting bold, independent voices.
We're really big fans of Film Fort, which is in Boise, Idaho, part of the Tree Fort Film and Music Festival. Mm-hmm. That's where Frank and I met.
Really?
And it's a great spot where they have cool programming. Yes, they program my films, so I like they're cool.
I love them. Great festival.
Love them. Love them.
You know, good
love
people. And often a lot of filmmakers come out for it. That's a really one that I very much recommend as a place. If you have a film and you submit and you get in, to definitely go.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. For me, a one that's, I think, just been consistently doing amazing programming is Sidewalk Film Festival. They've been in Alabama and Birmingham, and they've been around for so long. And I try to go whenever I can. It's one of the few festivals I try to go to, even sometimes when I don't have a film there, like just to go because I love the people there. There's a really warm, like homegrown nature to it. And their programming is so great because it crosses a whole range of not only genres, but also like budget. You'll see movies that have a bigger budget and smaller budget, but at least there's a consistent like tone that's happening of like taking risks and doing that. I, in fact, had always wanted to play Sidewalk for so long, and they were nice enough to still send you actual letters in the mail.
Mm.
And I got a letter in the mail when my first feature did not get into Sidewalk when I submitted it, but there was the nicest, sweetest letter that I kept. And then when I finally got my second feature in 6 years later, I actually brought that letter up and showed it up to the programmer. I was like, I kept this letter. And I kept thinking about it. And like you guys really pushed me to be like, oh, I was so close. I could feel it. Let's try again. And you just grow along the way. So I love them. I love Sidewalk.
That's amazing.
Definitely. Film Fort's definitely my sort of number one under the radar festival. But what I loved was Overlook in New Orleans, which Pete and I went to for Jethica.
Is that a horror focused
horror focused, which is not something I was really familiar with. But then I keep getting cast in all these horror comedies. So like, and it's like overload of like 2 years of like just watching indie horror movies. And that's like it, which was really cool. And I met a ton of great artists and filmmakers and then learned a lot about filmmaking and talk about like, you can't not make choices when you're doing a horror. Like everything has to be, because it just doesn't work. You know, you can't like get away with a wishy-washy kind of tone or anything. It's got to be super specific. And you get to really see filmmakers like colors sort of fly, being like, what kind of bold choices can you make? So Overlook was a lot of fun. And then just being in New Orleans and it's all in one location, sort of like Slam Dance. So it's like you can get to all the theaters really quickly. It's not like congested, but it's full. So that's another good one I recommend, particularly genre filmmakers submit to attend.
Love a genre fest. That's amazing. I'm like, is there a composer fest? Is there like, what's the hottest composer fest?
Do you know what? I'm pretty new to this world.
Yeah.
I'm sure that there is one. But I went to my first festival with Pete for Youngstown at the AFF in Poland, in Bratislava. And I was like, film festivals are so much more fun than music festivals.
They are.
Oh my God. That's so much better. Yeah. So I actually went, Pete was working on a film in progress in November. And I was just like, it's like a 2-hour flight from my house. I was like, I'm coming. I'll pack my bags. So yeah.
See you there.
Yeah, it's great. I really enjoy it.
Yeah, American Film Festival in Wrocław is a really great one. In Europe, especially where I imagine a lot of the No Film School audiences in America, but this is a cool, really cool festival and people who do it, that program brings American film to Europe, to Poland. And so really highly
recommend. Anchorage play there?
Anchorage played
there,
yeah.
Scott Monahan was the one who told me about it and sung its praises. Mm-hmm. It's so interesting because it's so unexpected.
Mm-hmm.
I wonder if A Real Pain will play there, which is an American film that takes place in Poland, mostly.
Yeah. I bet it'll be the opening night film. And I just love that it's called American Film Festival. It's like, just...
It is what it is. Yeah. So you know exactly spade to spade.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that's fantastic. And have there been, you know, again, we've been doing these like sort of live from Sundance check-ins about these like sort of festival magic moments how you crash into people in unexpected ways. Have you guys had any of those experiences?
I just this morning had like, we had like this interview got pushed back a little bit. Cool, I got a couple hours to kill. Just walk up and down Main Street, ran into a friend and it was kind of like, oh yeah, cool. It was kind of like a maybe see you later. And then I was like, what are you doing now? Like nothing. What are you doing? Nothing. All right, let's just keep kind of having this thing. And he brought me into this NYU Tisch alumni brunch and kind of stuck me in. Next thing you know, we're eating and then meeting two other people who I know through so-and-so. And then it just becomes an hour of like really fun, exciting talk with people who also are based in LA. And that's like the most fruitful thing about, you know, the really practical thing you can like take with you is like just relationships with new people to connect with. It's like really feels like the win that is up to you to kind of control, you know, how much you can get out of the festival the more you put in. So, and that kind of stuff all over the place, just people running into people and then letting the wind kind of take you to the next spot.
Yeah.
I truly feel like the balancing act of the festival is like, trying to still keep watching movies, but also spending the time to make those relationships and to see people. And it's like, oh man, I'm going to see a movie now. I'm going to meet that friend for coffee. I haven't seen in 5 years. Mm-hmm. But yeah, same as Will. It's like, it's just nice running into people and everybody has their own projects and you feel the support. And I think even if you know that they can't make your film or you can't make theirs, there's an energy in the air that's very infectious.
Yeah.
We went to a party the other night and I kind of just ran into someone who... I had a meeting with their partner the week before and it was just like really strange, like just kind of in the middle of the mountains in this house. It was really odd. But yeah, that's kind of why I wanted to come out and just kind of see the movie and just because it is so new to me, like kind of just figure out how it all works really.
Yeah.
This is my fourth time coming to Park City. The first two times I came, I didn't have any reason to come aside from dreams.
Yeah.
And I had fun. I had a great time and would often just walk up and down Main Street for the energy of it, just to like feel the vibes. And there are people I met at those festivals in line who I still know, who are now like one of them with this filmmaker I ran into. And she was like, I just finished shooting her first feature.
Oh.
And it's like, you know, the people here are people who love movies, who love making movies, the people you're standing in line with. Are very possibly going to make a movie one day. Yeah. And so get in line. You know?
Get in line.
Come on.
Get in line.
Yeah.
Okay. So two questions to wrap it up for us. The first is, what is happening next with the movie, Love and Work? And the second is, we always like to talk about, you know, advice for emerging filmmakers, people who are just starting their career, about to make the leap, maybe leaving a career, maybe starting film school, maybe dropping out of film school. I don't know. So advice that you'd have maybe for yourself like 10 years ago. And so Those are my two final questions.
We don't know what's happening next with Love and Work. Didn't plan beyond this. I assume, hope it'll play some more festivals. Mm-hmm. It would be very cool if somehow it got some sort of cool distribution thing. If it doesn't, that's okay. You can just put it on Amazon yourself.
Yes.
If you didn't know, it's like YouTube almost. Anyone can put a movie on Amazon. I've done it. And so the future of Love and Work is TBD. At some point, people will be able to see it.
Yeah.
And then I'll go first for like the idea of advice of things. And, you know, it's a great question. It's a question we get asked a lot or mm-hmm. listen to the answers of mm-hmm. a lot. And the thing that gets said a lot that I agree with, which is just like, you got to get out there and just make stuff. That's how you're going to learn. That's how you're going to get better. And the thing I would like to add to that is you'd be surprised how little you need. Mm-hmm. Like the things you think you need, you very well might not and probably don't. So instead of thinking about what you need, just look at the few things you have and just start.
Yeah.
Start with what's there. Your camera, whether it's your phone. I know people are always saying like shoot on your phone. It's not fun to shoot on a phone. It's like, yeah, it is HD, but it like it's not fun. It's like always auto focusing and all that crap.
Yeah.
But like all the other cameras that exist that are very easy to get, you probably also have are good enough.
Yeah.
So just like go out, start filming, start making a thing with your friends. Channel your 15-year-old. And the things you think you need are probably because of your own like insecurity mm. that like you want to be real. You want to make a new movie. That's like why it's fun to put like your fake production company logo at the beginning of it, of the credits, uh-huh. because like you just yeah. want it to feel real.
Yep.
Do it. It's fun.
Yeah.
But recognize that the things you think you need, are they actually things you need? Or is that because you're sort of wanting to be like a real movie?
Yeah.
Do you need all the list of like, go through all the list of things that you have on your like made up budget.
Right.
It's like, do you need a hair? Do you need makeup? Somebody needs to do that.
Yeah.
But it doesn't mean a person needs that as their job.
Right.
Like the hair and makeup person can be contained within the actor themselves. They do their own hair or makeup every day of their lives. So maybe you don't need it. Doesn't mean we don't love wonderful hair and makeup people. But
yeah.
when that stops you from
making
that ain't good.
Yeah.
I think patience, I think, is really important. And, you know, if you're making movies, hopefully you're making movies because you love to make movies. Mm-hmm. Some people, I think, need to really have a moment at different stages of their life where they have to ask, why am I making movies? Is it to make money? Is it for exposure? Is it to grow as an artist? Is it just to hang out with my friends? Can it be a combination of some of these things? Mm-hmm. But I think knowing that those feelings might evolve is okay.
Yeah.
Like, go easy on yourself. Like, you're going to change and your films are going to change along with you. And you have to allow yourself to be open to that change. And know that if you really want to do this, it's a long game. You're in it for the long game. You always hear these stories about people and they make that one film and all of a sudden they're doing all this stuff. They can make any movie they want. They have this money. And yes, it can happen. But I've seen a lot of people also kind of fall into a terrible trap because of that thing, that glittering gold that looks really great can sometimes come with a lot of trappings. To add to that, I would say you have to put yourself out there. I know everybody knows it. It's simple, but networking, like we were just talking about, is really key. Like you got to meet people who are like-minded, find people who you like the same movies and you gel with and you want to make those movies together. So my first few movies I ever made, unfortunately, were made with people who we had just had different ideas at what a movie was and the kind of movies that we liked. And I look back at those films and I go, oh, of course those movies aren't any good that I made because everybody was trying to make a different movie. We weren't on the same page. So putting yourself out there, making sure people know you're there and that you're hungry to tell a story, because oftentimes there's so many of us, there's so many artists out there trying to make films. Nobody's going to be knocking on your door. You have to do the thing yourself.
Yeah.
It always feels like there's always like the same three or four pieces of advice that are just kind of differently said. It's like, I kind of wanted to say the both things more or less in my own way, but maybe for a little different intention of like, I love the notion of like not trying to bang on the doors and get involved with people who are in the ether, who will just wave a wand and change your career. But like the networking across, you know, the whatever official term, but just making stuff with people who you see or like, and you know, when someone's like, this person's got something going on, even if they've never done anything yet, but it's like, there's something special here that's worth helping them tease it out of them and helping the other people around you, even though you feel like someone needs to help me, mm-hmm. passing that little service bit forward too. And then also like, being a teacher once told me, like, stay in the work, always be working on something, because that's how you know what you need next. That's where you know what you need to be working on, what kind of things, particularly as an actor. But I think probably true for filmmakers as well, because you go those like 2, 3, 4, 6, 12 months without doing something, and then it feels impossible again. And it feels like heavy lifting to even get something going, rather than keeping the kind of sort of fluid process of being like, makes it less precious and this and that. And then releasing your stuff. I just feel like everyone should release their bad stuff too.
Yes.
Honestly, like, yes. Work begets work. That's how you meet more people. That's how, like, it's a, like, I see so many people protecting their like reputation and image, and like, and it's like, it just is another way that constrains people from doing better work and growing.
Yeah.
So just like putting your stuff out there, and it will become a net positive, in my opinion.
One of my favorite interviews that I've done for No Film School is with Sam Hargrave, who came up as a stunt coordinator, director, mm-hmm. then directed Extraction, then Extraction mm-hmm. 2. But he intentionally leaves his bad shorts online because he's like, we have to see this. People have to see that it takes this to get to here. And I just think it's a great reminder. And also, like, encouraging us to continue to develop our voice and put it out there and create space for it, because it'll only make us better or truer to the stories we want to tell in the long run.
Yeah, I saw him play like a music set once. He plays
really?
like it was him and other like stunt guys who play like country music and stuff.
Oh.
And they were in a neighborhood during COVID. And one of my buddies is a stunt actor guy and like knew him, and we went. And like, that's funny because he was like, I'm going to play music, and my buddies are, you know, not professional musicians, but like, talk about doing something creative and just sharing it with your community.
Oh, I love that.
That's cool.
So much.
Yeah.
What a mensch.
Yeah.
How about you?
I think there are actually a lot of parallels with making records, you know, that like all the stuff that you guys have just said feels like it resonates a lot. And, you know, like what Frank just said about making films with people that have slightly different ideas, you know, sometimes that can be a really good thing. But I've definitely had the same experience where when I started to work, perhaps in more of a way that Pete works now, I just found it way more fun. I was having way more like just lols in the studio, and like, and I would just, it was just an excuse to like book somewhere, book, like tell all my friends. I'd have like 6 or 7 people there. And it was nice to have that memory of making records. It doesn't have to be this kind of stressful experience. It can be a totally different thing, you know?
Yeah.
So I feel like there's a lot of parallels with what you guys are doing.
Well, thank you all so much for being here. Just a quick round, where can people follow your work and follow Love and Work? And we'll start with you, Pete.
I mean, where do people follow work? I mean, is it always just Instagram?
I think so. Or websites, like websites.
Do people still use websites? Certainly I'm on Instagram. It's just my name, PETEOHS. And then I created a Instagram account for Love and Work, which is Love and Work Movie. Why do we create these Instagram accounts for the movie? I don't know. Like, it creates another job for somebody to have to like manage that. I don't know. And like, how many of, I mean, I guess, what is it for? It's so that then you can like do paid ads with your movie. That like, I don't know. I just think the world's confused with what we're doing.
It is a confusing time.
I would say probably just following me makes me feel good.
Yeah, you can follow me on Instagram. Yeah, Frank R.J. Mosley handle. And I do have an antiquated website still floating out there in the ether, frankmosley.com. But yeah, most of the Instagram is how I try to get the word out.
Yeah, Instagram for me is Will R. Madden. And I deleted my website like a year ago. I'm like, no one's looking at this. And I had it for like 7 years. And I'm like, I feel like Instagram is
a website.
Yeah, it is a website. So you can see links to all of my work and all the things. It's like, it's such an amazing tool. And you can sort of communicate through it. And it's like an easy sort of way that, let me just follow each other on Instagram instead of being like, can I get your, you know, whatever professional contact info, whatever. That's such another way to connect.
Yeah.
So if I was an actor, I would delete it in a heartbeat. But I think it's great for being a creative profession.
Yeah. A necessary evil.
I'm the same. Yeah. Instagram, Charles Watson, _.
Double underscore.
Yeah.
Because Charles Watson was taken.
There was 1 underscore. And I was God. I can't have 3, but I'll have 2.
Okay. Well, thank you all so much for being here.
Thank
and
you.
Congrats
thank you so
again.
Much.
I would also add that, and I don't know, you guys probably feel the same just because I know you, but I am very accessible. If you have questions or if you want to write me, whether it's my Instagram or finding my email address, which is on the internet, go for it. Send me a message, ask me a question, whatever. I will respond. I've been on the other side. I've written messages to people. When they respond, it feels great. When they don't, you forget you even wrote it. Write me.
Yeah, same. Open book.
Yeah, I've seen so many, I know we're wrapping up, but I've seen so many great filmmakers be like, oh, I really want this actor in my short or my indie feature, but I'm not even going to bother. But the amount of amazing actors who would seem way out of the league want to work. Actors want to work all the time. And even really working actors, quote unquote, work like a month a year. Yeah. Like reach out to those people, find a way to get them. Because I've seen them be like, yeah, doing shorts with these like actors from whatever show, just reach out to them. So reach out to Frank and hire him.
Yes.
Reach out to Will.
Well, thank you guys so much for joining us. Congrats again. Thank you to our listeners for tuning in. You can get more coverage of Slam Dance and Sundance and indie films and commercial films at nofilmschool.com. You can also follow in No Film School on socials at No Film School. And you can like, rate, and subscribe to the podcast across all platforms. Thank you for listening. Thank you so much for joining us and for giving us a peek inside this process. I'm so curious to hear from our listeners how this shifts your perspective on filmmaking. I know I came out feeling energized and kind of like, oh my God, I want to do this process. It sounds incredible. It sounds like adult summer camp filmmaking and being present in the moment in a way that, I don't know. I'm here for it. I'm here for it. Let us know what you think. Are you going to go away and film for 2 weeks somewhere in Texas? You can get more No Film School, of course, on nofilmschool.com. You can also like, rate, and subscribe to the podcast across all platforms. And finally, you can follow us on social media at No Film School. Thank you so much for listening.